It's All Things Considered on 91.9 FM WUOT. I'm Brandon Hollingsworth. Finding a spiritual connection to nature is a complicated thing. It's simultaneously New Age and one of society's oldest ideas. It's woven into the fabric of Eastern philosophy, but almost unheard of in Western religious traditions. It's at once intensely personal, but growing among the public. University of Florida professor Bron Taylor studies the resurgence of natural spirituality. Tonight, he'll talk about the subject and his book, Dark Green Religion, at the University of Tennessee's Dungan Memorial Lecture. Taylor says defining the spiritualism found in nature is no simple task.
Well, in a recent book that I wrote called Dark Green Religion, I try to capture a really wide variety of nature-related spiritualities. And I think what's interesting about it is how diverse these individuals and groups are, and also how widely scattered they are geographically and culturally. When I look at these phenomena, I tend to try to classify the traits and characteristics that are common to them. And you find beliefs that nature is sacred in some way, that it has intrinsic value. In other words, it has value apart from its usefulness to human beings. Usually this is also connected to a kind of kinship ethics, which in turn is often grounded, if not usually grounded, in an evolutionary cosmogony or story about how the world came to be the way it is. In other words, all organisms unfolded through a long evolutionary process, a struggle for existence, and indeed from contemporary DNA analysis, we know that we share a common ancestor. And so, quite literally, we are all related. And so that kind of sense of relatedness is often very common in these movements, and it leads to a kind of sense of ethical reciprocity with non-human organisms. Also quite common in these global nature-related spiritualities are what we might call metaphysics of interconnection and mutual dependence. And sometimes these get wrapped up in what we might call conventionally religious ideas, pantheism, for example, the idea that the world as a whole is divine, and even that there's some kind of superordinate divine intelligence behind nature, or it can be entirely naturalistic, more along the lines of the contemporary Gaia theory that sees the Earth as a self-regulating organism.
Your book covers the modern resurgence of this spirituality that's found in nature. But the idea that natural entities have some kind of spiritual qualities to them is actually one of the earliest religious ideas known in human history. Anthropologists refer to it as animism, and its origins predate, in many cases, the organized religions that we're more familiar with today. So why do you think that natural spirituality is on an upswing or a resurgence now?
That's a great question. I think that a lot of contemporary nature spirituality, you mentioned paganism, contemporary paganism, folks in that tradition sometimes have perceptions and feelings that they can communicate or commune with spiritual intelligences in nature. And you're quite right. This is a longstanding part of the sort of human spiritual and emotional repertoire. So in one sense, that's nothing new. But there are some new forms of what I would call naturalistic animism, namely the perception of personhood, agency, and value in non-human organisms that people arrive at either through their own personal experiences with animals that they know, for example, usually their pets, domestic companions, but also, very intriguingly, through what we're learning scientifically, especially through the science of ethology, the study of animal consciousness and behavior. So what we're discovering is that there's much more to the emotional and social lives of many animals than we, at least in the West, used to think. So I think we're finding an interesting rekindling of animistic perception, and some of it resonates with these longstanding forms of animism, and some of it is really quite new and more grounded in a naturalistic or scientific worldview.
How do you think that influences people? Let's assume that somebody has that kind of natural, naturalistic spirituality that you're talking about. How does that then influence their behavior in society, by themselves, in connection with nature?
Well, part of what I've documented in my research is the ways in which these sorts of beliefs and perceptions, whether they're the more Gaian spirituality, in which the world as a whole is conceived of as sacred or divine, or whether they're more animistic, which focuses on the intelligence, agency, and value of non-human organisms. In both of these sorts, which incidentally are often found among the same individuals and groups, people tend toward environmental activism politically, and they tend to try to simplify their lifestyles so they have less of an impact on the non-human world.
You write that the publication of Charles Darwin's On the Origin of Species back in 1859 was in many ways a reawakening point for this global movement. Why do you feel that way? What in your research leads you to that conclusion?
A lot of things. On the one hand, if we look at the way in which worldviews have begun to be transformed in the wake of that, shall we say, revelation. And of course, it wasn't just Darwin who was coming to it. Alfred Wallace was arriving at these understandings at about the same time, and they've been reinforced by subsequent generations of scientists. But that understanding did not catch on rapidly. But as it has spread around the world, fueled in no small measure by contemporary sciences and the universities, as they spread also around the world, an understanding of how we got on Earth to a place of such tremendous biological diversity is deeply influenced these days by among well-educated people by these kinds of worldviews. And of course, this understanding of how we got to such a diverse place, many people come to see as not easily compatible with religions that emerged quite some time ago, sometimes thousands of years ago. And so it's been a highly disruptive worldview, as you know, just by looking at the kinds of contestations we have over something like the theory of evolution. But people don't, even if they shed previous metaphysical understandings, they don't stop questing after meaning and understanding of who they are and their place in the universe and what it all means. And so I think that that very human tendency to try to figure out what the meaning of it all is has led to some novel and innovative approaches to meaning construction for modern people. And that's a part of what I talk about in some of my research.
You've written also that this dark green religion, as you term it, doesn't have an organizing body to spread its particular gospel, that it doesn't have a leader, it doesn't have a hierarchy as established organized religions do. How then typically do people find it and learn about it and then embrace it?
Right. Well, in part, you're quite right that that's a part of what I was saying. And then I also said that even though there aren't these readily identifiable bodies, organizational bodies, institution, religious gurus and saints and figures and priests and so forth, that doesn't mean that there aren't people devoted to promulgating these sorts of understandings and even experimenting with ritual forms to deepen those understandings and to connect people, to help people develop more deeply a sense of belonging and connection to nature. So where is this happening? Well, on the one hand, I would say some of it happens in the university, as I said before, where people are learning about ecology and evolution. But there's a great deal of artistic performance going on around the world that expresses these sorts of beliefs and feelings. So visual arts, photography, oftentimes plays, musicals. I did a book recently called Avatar and Nature Spirituality, which is an example of the use of the cinematic arts to get precisely these kind of dark green spiritual ideas across to a wider public. And as you know, that was the biggest blockbuster of all time and would have been even all the more so if the Chinese government hadn't felt threatened by it. So these sorts of spiritualities have cultural traction for a significant part of the human community today.
I have to ask, and on a personal level for you, how did you get interested in it? What led you to finding this subject so fascinating that you've written several books and probably many papers about it?
Well, I've long been interested in the role of religion in fostering political movements, starting off in Central and South America, looking at the political rebellions that were a mixture in some sense of kind of left-wing political thought and kind of radical Catholicism, especially, and some Protestantism. But right about the time I was wrapping up my PhD work at the University of Southern California, I had been noticing that there was a new environmental movement emerging in North America that was known as Earth First, the so-called radical environmental movement. And when I began to get some of the publications and listen to some of what they were saying, it was clear to me that there was a deep spirituality animating those folks. So I went to the woods to find those folks and immediately saw that in the music, in the artwork, and so forth, there was a kind of ritual resembling strategy to evoke in people what these folks thought to be their natural connections to the non-human world and to environmental systems generally. And then when I was studying those phenomena in North America, they also had a perception of other movements around the world that were, shall we say, getting uppity around environmental issues, and they felt affinity with them, and they were either projecting their own spirituality onto them, thinking those folks are like us, or those folks were like them. And I began to study grassroots environmental movements around the world to see whether their perceptions were accurate and whether indeed some of the kinds of spiritual sentiments that they had were widely spread or were just a kind of North American phenomenon.
Elements of natural spirituality or this animism live on in some modern religions, particularly those of Eastern philosophies, for example, Shinto and some Hindu sects. So what role does the spirituality of nature play in those religions?
I'm not an expert in Asian religion, but my general perception is that where these sorts of spiritualities are prevalent, including in Aboriginal traditions elsewhere in the world, there tends to be ethics of reciprocity that emerge, what we might call manners. How ought we to relate to the other beings with whom we inhabit the planet? And this doesn't mean that everybody becomes a vegan, you know, the new word for people who don't consume anything related to animal products. But it does sort of lead to a, what some would call a sacramental commons or a feeling that the whole process of eating and being eaten is a sacred process, and while we all have our time and place within that processes, these should be animated by a deep feeling of respect. And there are certain things and certain ways of being in the world and consuming others, because we all live by consuming others, other living things. There are ways in which we participate in those relationships that are proper and respectful, and there are ways that are disrespectful. And to make religious studies scholars are always reticent to make generalizations. So with that qualification in mind, I think that is quite common among cultures that have animistic beliefs and perceptions.
To flip then to the other hemisphere, when we talk about natural spirituality in Western religions, Judeo-Christian religions, how does natural spirituality fit into the framework of those religions which have already been organized?
In complicated ways. There's a general tendency to look at the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, as having beliefs of a God that's transcendent, above and beyond the world somehow, which makes this world penultimate, not as important as the envisioned heavenly future for people. And to make a long story short, there's other elements within these traditions that some scholars have pointed to that say they kind of work against an animistic perception. Clearly, in the Western religious traditions, there's tended to be an antipathy towards those considered pagan, people who view nature as sacred. That said, those very criticisms have, for some Jews and Christians and Muslims, caused a deep soul searching. What does our tradition say about the ways in which we should relate to the creation that God has brought to be? I think we're beginning to see what I would say are some fragile and nascent emerging greener trends within not just the Abrahamic tradition, certainly within them, and perhaps in some ways first within them, but also within the wider field of what we might call the world's religions, the major predominant ones.
Well, of course, we're sitting here in this country that was forged in the Industrial Revolution in a lot of ways. It is a predominantly Christian country, rooted in those Abrahamic traditions that you're talking about. So when you go around and in talking about your book or in doing other kinds of lectures, I mean, how do people react to this message? Are they calling you a New Age hippie? Get the hell back to Berkeley? I mean, what kind of reaction have you gotten when you talk about these ideas?
Well, it's really diverse. There are some in the evangelical community who have read and really like my work because it reinforces what they think is happening, namely that there's a significant portion of our Western cultures that are going back to paganism. And because they're worried about it, and when I point out that there's a rising tide of nature-related spirituality, it serves as evidence for them, since I'm kind of a social scientist, that that their concerns are warranted. At the same time, there are people within those traditions, what we might call liberal theologians, that are trying to even fuse longstanding pagan perceptions and beliefs with the Abrahamic traditions in some very innovative new religious forms. But there are other forms of Christianity that are more conservative that are really struggling with and against that evolutionary paradigm that we talked about earlier.
Bron Taylor is a professor of religion, nature, and environmental ethics at the University of Florida. On Thursday night at 7, he'll deliver the 4th annual David Dungan Lecture right here at the University of Tennessee. Dr. Taylor, thank you for being with us today on All Things Considered.
It's all my pleasure to be with you and your listeners.